Blog Talk Radio. Breaking news.
Ushering in a new era.
Get three coffins ready.
Mule. You let him get away from you?
You see, that's what I want to talk to you about. You're feeling real bad.
Huh?
My mule. You see, he got all riled up when you went and fired those shots at his feet.
Hey, you making some kind of joke?
No. You see, I understand you men were just playing around, but the mule, he just doesn't get it. Of course, if you were to all apologize.
I don't think it's nice you laughing. You see, my mule don't like people laughing. It's the crazy idea you're laughing at him. Now, if you apologize, like I know you're going to, I might convince him that you really didn't mean it.
Saw the whole thing. You killed all four of them. You'll pay all right. You'll be strung up.
Who are you?
Don't fire, shot. I'm John Baxter. Sheriff.
Yeah. Well, if you're the sheriff, you better get these men on the ground.
War of the Words, Relentless Radio number 110. Gotta kick it off badass, because today we have the one and only Blake Grice. That's right, UFC Hall and Hall of Famer, international man of mystery himself on the show. We're going to get down with some great topics, and I couldn't think of any better way to jumpstart the awesomeness then one little clip from one of my favorite films. And we're not going to waste any more time. We're going to jump right in and bring him on, Mr. Blake Grice. Blake, what's going on with you? Hello? Are you there?
Here, I was trying to use like a little set of headphones, but I couldn't hear you. I guess you couldn't hear me. I am here.
The building, 100%. You know, I just had to throw some of that Clint Eastwood flavor out there before we brought you on.
Yeah, that mule. I want that mule.
I'm telling you, man, you don't mess with a man's mule. It's just kind of one of those. It should be like an extra commandment. Like, I think this, it's not a learned thing. You're born inherently not to shoot at a man's mule, you know? So,
yeah,
hey.
Of course.
How you been, brother? How you been, man? I know you're keeping busy.
Man, I haven't been too busy recently. You know, I was supposed to be in, actually, if all had gone according to plan, I would just be returning from Amman, Jordan, as we speak. But Desert Force canceled on me with about 48 hours before I was supposed to board the plane. I'm not really even sure why, to tell you the truth. They said it was financial. Once you reach that Hall of Fame status, you can charge a little bit more. But they agreed to my fee. It's the same fee I make when I go to GFC in Kuwait, and then they back that on me. So who knows? But I'm, you know what? It was my daughter's birthday, so I didn't miss that. So I was glad to be here.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes, when you're on such an international scene, you know, you do have to, you know, stop and take that time, you know, and I'm sure that in, you've obviously been there before. Is that a wonderful place out there in Jordan?
Well, I've never been to Jordan. I've been to Kuwait 7 times. I've been to Dubai over in the UAE. So I've been to the Gulf states there. I've been down near the Saudi border, and I've also been pretty close to the Iraqi border. But Jordan is going to be west a couple of hours. It's right near it borders Israel and Syria. So it looks to be beautiful. They've got Roman ruins there, the Dead Sea. You know, that whole scene looked amazing. And Desert Force is a good show. But you know, it just didn't work out. So it's whatever, man.
Always like to ask about like the differences between, you know, shows and stuff. And usually we're talking about maybe something like how was the last conflict versus the last maybe NFC or maybe the last warfare event or something. But, you know, with you traveling so broad, are there any like major differences between the way we say do MMA or get down with it in the Southeast and the way it happens, you know, halfway around the world? Or is it relatively the same when the cage door closes?
You know, man, it's almost the exact same. I mean, of course, there are some variables. They have a lot more money over there. You know, Kuwait's one of the richest countries in the world. They sit on the world's deposit of oil. So there's a lot of money over there. So everything is just turned up a notch in terms of the fighter entrances. You know, their LED screen is as big as my house. They have pyrotechnics. Their cage is an exact duplicate of the UFC cage. They've got the cameras that are on the big booms that are sweeping down over the octagon during the action. Other than simply aesthetically, it's the same though. The fighters come from all over the world. They fight. I ref. We go home afterwards.
You know, I used to, when I first started actually traveling around doing MMA, I always thought it was awesome when I'd be maybe like a state or two over, staying in a hotel, that kind of thing. It was pretty cool, you know, the first couple of times. But I can imagine the badassness, you know, to go somewhere as far away and do that kind of thing. That's got to be a whole step up, at least there.
It's one of the coolest experiences of my life. You know, without a doubt, I kind of got over there. Luck brought me there the first time. Everybody else was scared to go. I said I would go. And it just worked out. And it's not only the fights over there. It's, you know, it's such a long flight that we end up spending close to a full week over there. And we are staying in a resort, you know, on the beach. We've got a private beach. I mean, it is like, I can't explain how nice it is. If you gave me a chance to do that or the UFC, I'm going to do that, put it that way.
Hey, you know, the pictures that usually when you do go that we see, they're those kind of like when you know people maybe who live in Hawaii, places like that, and you're
right,
insanely jealous. And I got to imagine, especially Blake, the awesomeness of Blake Grice. I mean, you guys definitely take pictures on purpose sometimes just to let us know at home how awesome it is where you are.
I take videos on purpose to make people jealous, more specifically those jerks over in North Carolina, those stupid refs that have banned me from Charlotte, quote-unquote. I took a picture of me with my foot in the Persian Gulf, you know, holding a pet tiger. Said, hey, didn't see you there, boys. Just over here refing on the Persian Gulf. Don't mind me. Have fun in Charlotte at Club Label tonight.
Yeah, no big deal. Just
no
hanging out
deal.
With a clouded leopard.
Hashtag NBD.
NBD, son. Man, that's awesome. One of the things that we actually, and Kobe's here. I don't know if you can hear me, Kobe, but I turned your mic on, bro.
Are you there?
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if it was on or not. I actually was about to ask, a question, but I didn't think it was on. Blake, you're really
banned go ahead.
From Charlotte?
Huh?
Blake, you're really banned from Charlotte?
That's a true. That is a 100% true story. Not only am I banned from Charlotte, I caught a year suspension from the North Carolina Commission because of their refs and the corruption with their referees that I just wasn't having it. So I cussed one of them out, and they're really they got real jealous when the old Hall of Famer headed north across that state line. They realized this guy's going to take my job because he is so much better than me. He's going to take my job, and they were right. Man, they wrote letters to the ABC. They did. One of them threw a steel chair at me, okay? I mean, like, a steel chair. He threw it at me.
Hell in the cell.
Pretty much. Yeah, man. It all happened at Fight Lab a couple years ago. You know, Fight Lab wanted to use me. Michael Allen, Kenny Lyon. I'm real good friends with Mike Allen. I've known him for forever. But the North Carolina Commission will not. I think it's kind of sad when the promoter, the Fight Lab promoter, says, hey, I have this show. I want to bring in this head referee, and the commission won't let him.
Yeah, that's kind of stupid.
Silly.
Especially when your throwing chairs ratio is exponentially lower than the North Carolina refs.
Right. And on every show in North Carolina, they end up screwing up. They end up doing something stupid, and I always get texts about it.
Yeah, I'm going to be
honest.
Yeah,
man, you're like when
we were.
Sorry. No, I was just saying Blake's like ref tech support.
Well, people know me. They've got my number, and I get texts live from the venue going, dude, these guys are so bad. And all I can say is, yes, you're right, they are. And, you know, I don't want to badmouth anybody, but they asked for it.
Hey, Eric, you remember when we were in Charlotte? Blake, I don't think you rested at all that night, did you? Well, you couldn't have if you'd been banned, but
he could.
I remember that night was stupid. You remember that
way
shit?
Stupid.
Everything about that Charlotte card, that North Carolina card
was weird.
Excuse my French, was fucking stupid. Everything.
Yeah, I remember fighting. They had their own in-house in the cage commentator, or you know, that guy who goes in and asks the questions. And he was trying to beat me in there and get there first, like he was 8 years old, and try to like jump up on the fighters. And I had to actually say something. I mean, you know, if he was good, I don't think I would have cared. But it was like a very, it was horrible. It was droll, brother. I mean, you were there. It was awful.
That's the other thing, guys.
Weird,
you're talking,
man.
You're talking about the conflict show. I've done every conflict show so far. But when they cross that North Carolina state line, I'm all of a sudden not allowed to do it. And I don't think that's right. Because when the UFC came to Charlotte, they were allowed to bring in Herb Dean and John McCarthy, whoever, right? So they should let all promoters bring in whoever they want to as a referee.
Absolutely. It sets a standard, I think.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But, you know,
it
is what it is.
It shows you that the North Carolina, they only want to use certain people for certain reasons.
Right.
I'm not going to get big into that because it's none of my business.
Yeah.
But it just kind of shows you, well, we're not going to use Blake for whatever reason because Blake might happen to do the right thing. You know, I'm not using Blake Thorn, but, you know.
Or, you know, maybe he might notice that we are not doing the right thing, or maybe he might notice that we're lazy, or maybe he might notice this, that, and 12 other things because he's going to.
Oh, I guarantee you I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he,
no question.
And he's going to say something.
Well, that's
no
what started all this, guys. Something happened, and I said something. You know, and I said, what in the world are you doing? And that started the fight. I said it live at the show.
So that's how it started.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I could go on for hours about that
story,
but.
Well, you know, we have something else that I know that you wanted definitely to talk about. It was a Blake Edu piece, and I was definitely part of today, and it kind of ties in a bit now to what we're sort of talking about. And Kobe's here because it involves Kobe's scrotum, if I'm not mistaken. You wanted to mention something about at Conflict 28. Obviously, the video just came out. I don't know who was tagged in, who wasn't, because it was private. But there was a generous amount of penis engagement that occurred.
And normally, that's not a bad thing. Okay,
yes,
let's get that
correct.
Straight.
Yeah,
yes.
We're in a fight.
And I know you definitely wanted. And I definitely wanted to make sure we took some time today, because I know you had some comments to make about that and some really important things that I thought also were definitely of value for fans and really everybody. Because it was interesting.
Yeah, you know, here's how that works. I'm an ABC trainer. I'm one of seven judge and referee trainers for the United States. So I have spent like hours and hours and hours. I just got back from Wyoming. I'm getting ready to go to West Virginia. I've done it in Kuwait, all over the world, training on how to judge and how to ref. So it's not just my experience that I'm speaking from. It's these training classes that I teach. And so groin shots or fouls in general, accidental fouls are kind of tough to handle. With the groin shots, I know when you see the first one, like especially if you're a fan of Kobe or a friend or a family member, you know, it's automatically you start booing, and the ref needs to do – that's an illegal blow, which it is. It's definitely an illegal blow. I really wanted to just say that my hands are very tied for something like a groin shot that's not – short of, you know, you squatting down and punching him straight in the nuts. With an accidental foul, I can't start taking points, you know, on the first accident. If I did that, that would set a precedent for down the road that I could not keep up with.
That would be bad.
Because then you're going to be excited. Oh, every time you get a nut shot, now people are going to start faking nut shots for point deductions. There's a lot that comes with that down the road. And the thing about the groin shot, man, especially with like knees and inside leg kicks and even body kicks if you're going for them, is that we've got an area. I'm actually looking down at my crotch as I'm doing this and touching it. Illegal. And then if I move 1 centimeter over, it's perfectly legal. So that, you know, it's like the back of the head is very obvious. If I spike elbow your spine, you know, there. But, a commonly used weapon is that inside leg kick and kneeing the thigh. Those things start happening, go ahead.
I was just saying one of the most. I was sorry. You're absolutely right. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's used all the time. And so when that first groin shot happens, it's just simply – hey, it's a break. I'm going to give him his – he's allowed up to 5 minutes of rest. He doesn't have to take the 5 minutes. If he tells me he needs to see the doctor, we can do that. But I'm not going to take any action at that point, assuming it was accidental. Now, whenever the next one may be, whether that's in the same round or right before the bell rings to end it, if there's another accidental groin shot, I still don't have a reason, per se, to take – action in terms of point deduction or disqualifying or anything. Some refs will let that keep going. I say, hey, if you do something three times, no matter how small it is, if you break a rule three times, I'm always going to start doing something at that point. So
in that fight,
my call was the first two were definitely, in my opinion, accidental. Now, if they were on purpose, I'd have to prove that, right? And I don't think I could. It would just be a judgment call. It happened a third time. I took a point from him, and then Kobe went on to win by armbar. But, you know, he was injured. I think it actually happened another time. It was Kobe had his leg up and Bart kicked, and it kind of came up under his butt maybe. Here's my big thing too. At the end of the day, it's a fist fight. It is a fist fight with grown men that weigh close to 200 pounds that are literally trying to knock each other unconscious. We wear cups. We have rules, and sometimes, man, those things just happen. And there's nothing that really
anybody could. I couldn't have done anything differently. There's no way I could have deducted a point off of an accidental groin shot. That's just not.
Yeah, no way. I thought it was very well handled. I actually have an interesting question off of what you said. Do you find, is there any difference to you? And you did kind of answer it, but I just want to make sure. If, say, a guy, is there any difference to you if there's three groin shots over five rounds or three groin shots early on? Like, is the time between each one, and not groin shots, any illegal blow, is the time between them have any weight on it, happen more spaced out versus if they happen kind of back to back to back?
Man, that's a good question, and there's not really a straightforward answer. I think my first reaction is no. An accident is an accident. It doesn't, you know, if you do something twice, back to back, if it's truly an accident, then it's truly an accident, and the time doesn't matter. Now, if we are seeing, you know, if I saw four eye pokes in the first minute, you know, then we're seeing a pattern of things, and that's when I start telling people to abandon that weapon. I told Bart that. I said, abandon the weapon because you're going to lose another point. And by the way, the next, if he did it again, and especially if I deemed it on purpose at that point, if I were to ever go that route, that's when you start talking about taking 2 points for a foul. A foul, an intentional foul with injury can warrant 2 points being taken, or a DQ, of course. So I was very stern, and I said, hey, one more time, and we got serious problems. I've fought before, guys. I've been kicked in the nuts before. I know what it does. I know how it takes it out of you. My takeaway here is don't blame the ref. Blame the other guy.
Oh, yeah.
Blame the guy that kicked you in the nuts, not me. I've got a collared shirt on in there just trying to stay out of it.
I want to jump in real quick.
Yeah.
We were talking about my fight. I mean, I don't know if it's been brought up with what you just said. I don't know if it's been brought up, but I don't blame you none whatsoever.
I didn't think you did.
Know.
No. It's more of the crowd
is
your fault. It's the crowd that starts getting involved.
Those emotions. It's like none of them seemed intentional to me, and I also noticed too that once the third one happened and the point came away, there really wasn't an issue with it after that. Not really. I mean, not like it. Well, there was kind of a bundle of it early, and then it stopped. Although he did continue to use that weapon, it stopped.
Here's why he continued to use it. Kobe, no offense, and you know this, he was winning that fight with leg kicks. You know, that's just a fact.
Yes.
But, it's hard to abandon the weapon that is winning you the fight, right? And I can't get into who the favorite was or who I thought was going to win, but I can say that maybe that wasn't going the way that I thought it was going to go. I'm not sure if it went the way he thought it was going to go, being able to win a fight against Kobe with leg kicks. But, hey, I'm not sure if he didn't sit down and go, holy shit, this is working. I'm going to beat this guy with leg kicks.
Nobody realized that.
Right.
Yeah,
it's almost impossible
surprised.
To abandon the weapon that's working. You know, I'm going, hey, you're probably not going to win this fight with your hands or on the ground. You're winning it with leg kicks, but you can't do that anymore because I'm about to DQ you. So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody saw that coming. Fuck, I didn't, and I was the one preparing for the fight.
Right.
I can't blame anybody. First off, I won the fight, so I was successful. Second off, I haven't sustained any major injuries, so it doesn't matter. Right. But during the fight, yeah, it was to the point to where I was ready to quit, and I was angry because I saw it as it's continuing to happen. But, like I said, it's over. It's done with now. I don't blame anybody. Even if you hadn't taken a point, Blake, it wouldn't have mattered. Like I said, I told everybody, we're not playing fucking patty cake. We're punching and kicking each other. It happened.
Right. And I know that's easy for us to say now, and it's easy for me to say then, but I realize that's a little bit harder for you to swallow as it's happening live. And I'm not taking away from Bart, by the way. I like Bart. I think he's a good guy. But on paper, he wasn't supposed to beat you if we're looking at records. You know, he was definitely an underdog in that fight. So I didn't want to make it sound like, you know, he's some bum that was never going to win that fight, because that's not true. I think on paper, Bart Weeks wins that fight 2.5 out of 10 times.
Well, you know, yeah. I think the big point that's the point that we're making is something like I think we all expected Bart to come out and use a great deal of hands, and the fact that it went with the leg kicks is was the biggest surprise of the whole thing. Maybe not that he was winning the fight, but how he was winning the fight was something. I don't think any single person in that whole building was there like, yo, Bart's about to come out here and get these legs working. I don't think any
leg
person.
Leg kick clinic coming up. No one said that.
Yeah.
No.
Not at all. And so I thought that right there was interesting. I thought it also heightened the emotion on all sides.
Yep.
And I know that as we all know, I think the fans and the two different camps emotion and respect for each other was very, very high. This was also not just your typical sort of like Emmys getting together, or even just a regular kind of title fight. To me, there was a lot involved in it that was cerebral. I think that was kind of popping inside that cage as well as that fight went on. I think
And listen, I'm a martial artist by trade, by profession. I own a Thai boxing gym, so one of the biggest weapons that we work on every night of the week is leg kicks. And I don't know if the average fan, matter of fact, I know they don't. The average fan doesn't appreciate the leg kick and what it can do to somebody and how debilitating it can be. Matter of fact, one thing I do when I have new guys come in the gym is I make them stand and I kick them in the leg at about 10% power with 100% technique, and they always have the same look on their face, like, holy shit, I cannot believe how bad that hurt. So it makes them want to come back and learn it a little bit more. I do it with some humor, but to win a fight, I mean, you know, a leg kick is no joke. And if done right, man, I mean, obviously it can win title fights. I just didn't expect it in that one, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, if we're going to be completely honest, that fight most likely in everyone's eyes went the exact opposite way. People saw me coming out, throwing a bunch of kicks and landing stuff, and him throwing a bunch of hands.
That's what I thought. Completely opposite. In the commentary. Yes.
Opposite. He come out throwing kicks, and I was landing more hand combinations. It threw me off completely. I was just confused as y'all were, okay?
Hey, Eric, speaking of confusion, let's address the issue that you and I had, and I'll tell you, because we haven't talked since then, and I'll tell you why I was even said anything, and we can go from there. When it happened, I thought I heard you stand up and lean in on me, commentating and bashing me as a ref, telling me what I should be doing. I honestly thought that's what it was. So that's when I leaned into you, and I was really going like, what are you talking about? I still don't know what happened. We had a moment.
I think, yes, we had an intimate moment. I thought we were a lover's quarrel, if you would. I watched the video the other day because Chris Hauser said I had very favored commentary. So I went in and kind of wrote down, I put a B next to what I said if it was about Bart, and K if it was about Kobe, and it came out to be it was a little more for Bart, actually, on the things I said. I was speaking from the perspective of the champ, which may have made it sound the way that it did slightly, but I tend to commentate title fights from that perspective of what someone is having to do to take the belt. I didn't hear any of that or me say anything like that in the tape, and I do remember standing up and saying something about the third one. I think it was like, you know, something like how many times, or like what is with the ball kicks or something like that. And really, when you were talking to me, I didn't understand what was going on, and then I think, you know, Jared behind us, I think, also was misunderstanding what was going on, and I'm not trying to blame the man for shit, but I really didn't feel any sort of weirdness until that part kind of came into the play, and then I was like, why are we so hype all of a sudden? Why do I feel like things are aggressive? I didn't have a problem with what was going on. No, you're cool.
Okay,
I actually was pretty confused, but when you were talking to me, there was a moment where I was like, Blake, I was kind of stern back because I was kind of receiving it a little, and I was like, I'm what? So, yeah, man, there was definitely a moment that transpired, but at no juncture, you know, was I, like, intentionally trying to be rude to you. If you look at the pattern, we talked about patterns of our, you know, runnings into each other's and talking and stuff. I don't think that's, like, conducive to the way I act towards you in general.
No,
you know, either.
Definitely
so
not.
I, you know,
definitely not. And you're right. When Jared said that to me, I've never had a cross word with the promoter, and I'm not saying it hurt my feelings, but I'm going, hang on a minute, they're ganging up on me now. Everybody's against me in this whole place. What have I done? Have I done something wrong? Da, 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 da. So that was even making me more defensive, you know, because I don't need to hear this from y'all. Just let me ref and y'all stand out there. And so it was just it was really me being Blake Grice, which can be a total asshole sometimes. I'm the biggest one in the world.
Well, you know, we are. I think, you know, in all fairness, we both have very lively, commanding and beautiful personalities. I mean, that's why we do what we do. So, you know, it was two amazing people having a miscommunication and being like, wait a minute, I'm cool as fuck. What are you talking about?
Right.
Let me jump in real quick and clear a little bit of it up because sure. There's actually three different videos. One is from a buddy of mine that was like right there near y'all. Here's what happened. The third time that I actually got kicked in the nuts, I was in one stance, and as I was switching to the other stance, he threw a kick, and instead of it landing on the outside of my left leg, it came across and caught me in the nuts. Y'all couldn't see it where y'all were, Eric, because y'all were kind of behind me to my right hip. So to y'all, it looked like a leg kick. In the video he had, it looked like a leg kick. But in the conflict video, you can kind of see me getting kicked in the nuts. So initially, I think you and Jared were like, whoa, that wasn't a foul. But Blake saw it, and Blake stopped it, and you were like, whoa. Y'all were kind of like, whoa, what are you doing, Blake? And I think that's kind of where it got drummed real quick. Was like, what are you doing, Blake? That didn't look like a kick in the nuts, you know?
I'm not saying that I know that is what they were thinking, but I am saying that's exactly the kind of thing that I thought was happening. Make sense?
Yeah, I'm not saying that's exactly what happened, but from my perspective, being in the cage, the one that got kicked in the nuts and the one that's seen most all of the videos, that's kind of what happened. Because everybody wanted to see the fight, you know, keep going. And initially it was getting stopped a lot. And then that was the third time it got stopped. And it was kind of like, whoa, Blake, why do you keep stopping this fucking fight? Let the motherfucker fight. You know, because that didn't look like a nut kick. But,
yeah.
Anyway, we're good now.
It could have definitely been something like that. But I, when you were describing it early on, I thought it was more like you were saying I like got up and leaned in and addressed you personally, and I don't recall.
I kind of thought that too. The reality is I have no idea what happened. Like, honestly, I don't. I was just reacting. I was overreacting about maybe, you know, being confused and thinking maybe that. There was a lot going on.
A ton of energy. Yeah, there was a ton. Like I said, there was a ton of stuff happening, and it was a super, super hype event. I was very eager to see both individuals fight. Me and Kobe and I have talked about it, too, about my personal thoughts on how the fight, what I thought, actually his last two, and this one, you know, made me believe in a lot of things that Kobe says that I now completely believe. But, you know, I had some different feelings and stuff, and we all do. And speaking of confusion, there was something else I definitely wanted to touch on, was that there was another fight that had, like, a very, very weird happening. It was, like, three or four fights in. It was really strange. And if you remember the fight I'm talking about, I would love to hear your thoughts on that fight. I think it might have been David Langston's fight, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah, that was it.
I'm assuming you're talking about the early stoppage.
Yeah, like maybe there was like no wave off or something. I can't remember exactly what it was.
I can tell you what happened. When people take a referee class, whether it's mine or anybody else's, they pass the written test. And a lot of people go, well, you're not going to make them a ref right then, are you? And it's like, no, of course not. They have to do a lot more. It usually takes upwards of a year of them, you know, showing up and shadowing and checking people in and then, you know, watching the rules meetings. They travel on their own. So it shows a level of commitment to get to there. So this is probably 6 months of him
really just for free following us. And then, so he says, hey, I'm ready to do my first one. I take it back. I said, so it's time to watch you do a fight. So, you know, you've taken the class 6 months ago. You've shadowed 3 or 4, so it's time to do your fight. I have done everything that I can do for you up until this point. And honestly, my last words are don't screw this up, because if you do, that's probably it, because there's not a lot of room for error in mixed martial arts. So the ref jumped in and kind of spazzed, went over and stopped the fight. I think he kind of went, oh, no. So it was too late. And so it was a combination of stopping the fight too early and then not being sure of himself and spazzing at the same time, going, I was on my way into the cage. I don't know if you guys saw this.
I did.
I was going to walk up and take the microphone or try to explain what was going on, because you can't restart it. You know, once you stop a fight,
it's over.
It's over. So it was just, that was a human error, you know, and it's the same thing with a lot of fighters. Even, you know, you take your first fight and you totally spaz and you screw it up. And that's very common. And so that's what happened. It was human error. He was nervous. And he screwed up. And there's no other way to put that. He just simply screwed up.
I didn't get to see it, but I've heard a lot about it. Well, it was simply just an early stoppage play.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. You know, he thought that the guy was, you know, more hurt than he was, blah, blah, blah. And he was trying to justify it to me. And what I was saying was, no, stop, just own it. Because if you're justifying it to me, that means you might do it again, you know, if you're allowed back. Just say, no, that was a really terrible stoppage, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I would also think, too, that the confidence factor should be very, very present. Like I mess up all the time on the microphone, and I just find a way to own it or something, you know, similar of that nature. And I feel like in that fight, if, you know, you haven't really stopped, if he had just went ahead and grabbed the hands and went through with the decision and got out, it would have been a much smoother and more dealable issue.
We wouldn't be talking about it right now, put it that way. Because, hey, let's be honest, early stoppages happen. And that's better than late stoppage. It's better than a death. You know, there's a lot of bad things that can happen. And an early stoppage, you know, go home. We'll come do it again next time. But it was the drama surrounding it is the problem. You know what the final point on that, though, is a lot of people think that reffing is easy. And I'm here to tell you, it's not.
It's not.
I think I've got a handle on it, but that's because I've been doing it for a decade. So these new referees, when they were like, 10 years old, I was reffing fights, man. So I've done it forever. So I'm like, I get nervous before the UFC now. I don't have any nerves before a regular fight. I want the hard fights, but there's a lot of nerves. You know, there's a lot of pressure on a new person, and it's a lot easier to sit back and talk about it on TV and to judge a ref than it is to get in there and do it.
You know, and speaking of that, I've actually got a pretty interesting question that just came to mind. You know, you obviously lend a lot to the stability of, let's say, the professionalism and the bar of MMA as best as you can in the spheres that you are working in. You know, you do a very good job of that and the training and stuff. Have you taken on, say, an apprentice? Is there a person that's going to take the throne afterwards? Do you have any refs out there that you feel are doing a great job, or maybe they could, say, come in? I mean, I know you do this to your 8,000, but is there anybody out there that you feel like, maybe not even specifically yet, or have you even thought about passing that if that time comes, or making sure that bar stays beat once you're kind of unable to continue to directly affect it?
Okay. Yes and no. I haven't thought about somebody replacing me, because I'm relatively young. I'm 39. I'm still, you know, I when I see people on TV, like these older refs on TV that are well into their 50s. So I've got a long time. I've got a lot of refereeing miles left in me. But to answer your question, if I died today, would South Carolina mixed martial arts go to hell? No, it wouldn't. There's a couple of guys that are coming along nicely that could take over. You know, let's be honest. Nobody is going to be the Blake Grice, okay? But they could step up and be a leader. And it's not, you know, man, it's not so much about their refereeing skills as it is their leadership skills and their confidence and their desire to do better. So mixed martial arts in South Carolina would survive and thrive if I died right now on this telephone. Yes.
All right. Well, that was awesome. Let the beauty and the crypticness intertwine ever so.
Listen, if you start mentioning names, I'm going to hurt feelings. You know what I mean?
Either you're going to hurt feelings or you're going to, like, swell heads. So I'm glad you took the road that you took. Like, you know, once I asked the question, I was like, oh, here we go. So I'm glad. It's a good move. I like that. And besides, you know, it's kind of like it's being like, you know, hey, Blake, who's going to outshine you? What's the answer? You know, nobody.
Nobody,
I mean, that's my
outshine me. I'm a very confident person. And you can see that in my soccer that I talk about on the internet and me in the gym or, you know, me sparring with guys or refereeing. You're not going to outshine me. Even if you have the ability, I still don't believe that you are. I'm still fully confident that I'm going to be better than you and beat you. And I think that's why I'm good at certain things, just because of my confidence in it. And I may not even be that good. I may just be faking it. But you don't know that, if that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. And, you know, Kobe, it's time. We've hit the 15-minute mark, so you already know what time that means. All you guys out there listening as well, which is quite a lot today. Pretty awesome. See you guys there. Kobe, Brick in the Wall. You know what it is, man. It's time for the official Brick in the Wall on episode 110. This is like Blake's almost 10th time on our show. We're getting close to that. We have to have some kind of, like, you know, special the next time you come on. But, Kobe, man, what you got for us, bro?
I like what Blake just said. He said, you know, no matter whether you're better than me or not, my confidence is going to, you know, I believe I'm better than you, so that's why. I like that, what he said. But I don't know. I kind of want to ask him a question that has to do with me, but I don't know if he'll answer it or not. But I'm going to ask it anyway, so I don't give a shit, even if he hurts my feelings. Doesn't matter. So obviously, Blake, you know a lot of people in the Southeast, and I'm sure you've known of me for a while. But these last two or three fights I've had, did you think I was going to win, or did you think I was going to get beat like a lot of other people did?
You're asking my opinion of you in general.
I guess you could say that, but
I've never thought you were going to lose a fight ever against anybody. You are the biggest. Did you fight at 55?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I fought at 55, but in Savannah when I fought Kaven, that was at 70. But that's the most recent time that I've not fought at 55.
Okay. Either way, when I stand next to you when you are fighting, I feel like we're kind of the same size. Now I know I'm a little fat, but so I'm 6'3", say 220. That's my frame, and if you take away the approaching 40 fat, we have the same build. And it's amazing to me that you can even fight at 170. You're a really big guy. And so, no, I've actually thought that some of your last fights weren't fair for the other guy, to be honest.
Wow.
And I think it's probably time for you to go pro and make money doing it.
Yeah, that's kind of the next step. The reason I ask that question is because a lot of people have been doubting me for a long time, and I really respect what you think, and I've known you for a very long time. You reffed my very first fight, the very first conflict show ever. I was the first fight on the card. That was the very beginning for conflict. It was fight night at the Point One. I was the first fight against Nick Vestioni.
Yeah, that guy from Myrtle Beach, the guy from New York or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And it's funny because you even took a point from him because he grabbed the ropes. That was when we actually fought in an actual ring, not a cage.
Yeah.
And he grabbed the ropes a few times and you took a point. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't.
So I've known you for a long time, and I really respect what you say. I love that you're a Muay Thai guy. So that's why I was asking that question. I really just wanted to know what you thought about me, just, you know, to gauge things.
So, yeah, no, I always thought you were a killer. I actually thought when you were losing via leg kicks that something was wrong maybe. Maybe you've got an injury that I don't know about, or maybe you're just spazzing. But I think that if you did that fight over again, you would be getting out of the way of those kicks or checking them or even – see, for me, checking is not good enough. I think you need to be checking and then countering. So every leg kick that is thrown, I'm going to check, and then I'm going to fire one back at you. So I think you're that level of a guy. I think you're – I don't know what your amateur record is, but it's something like 15-1. What is your amateur record?
On mixedmartialarts.com, it's 10-0, but full sanction and all is 13-1 now.
Okay, so you've got one of them. You're doing it right. A lot of guys have four or five fights, and then they go, I'm going pro, and I'm going, you suck. You
yeah.
have done it right. You've been fighting a long time. You're going pro because you're too good to be amateur anymore, when most people go pro just because they feel like they should be getting paid.
Correct. I will agree with
you
on that.
You're a title holder. You've fought everybody around. You've proven it. You've done almost 15 fights. You've lost one. So you've done everything the right way. Matter of fact, that could be the model for how to fight as an amateur. Because, you know, I'm the same way with my guys in my gym on the Thai level. You know, my kid Jeremy Barrett had 25 amateur fights.
Yep.
Clint Blizzard has 25 amateur fights. You know, and just it's people are too quick to go pro. And I'm going, hang on, bro. You're training two nights a week. You are the furthest thing from a professional I've ever seen. So stop. So you're doing it right, man. I would enjoy
there
to have
goes.
You in the.
Go ahead, Blake.
No, I was just saying he's the type of guy that I would enjoy to have in my gym. Now, after I've said all this about you, I probably can't ref you again. So, and that's not necessarily true. I think a lot about a lot of the guys out there. There's a lot of great fighters, and if you ask me an opinion about any fighter, I'll give it.
Well, thank you. The reason I asked is because I just kind of wanted to know where, you know, because like I said, I think a lot about you and I respect you a lot. I kind of want to see, well, what does Blake think? Because Blake, for the most part, has got his shit together and he knows about the sport. He knows about people. And I just kind of wanted to see what you thought. So that's my brick in the wall.
Well, that's it.
There you go. The brick in the wall, well placed and mortared as we keep building it up and up. Man, it's a good question. You know, and I think that. This fight, that fight in particular, I refer to it as a kind of a Sonnen Silva one for conflict. I don't know if that's necessarily the most fair way to say it, but I felt like both guys had a pretty good claim to doing well at pieces, and you know, we were all pleasantly surprised in having a very unexpected turnout in both throughout the fight and at the end. I mean, those are almost some instant classic happenings from bell to bell that occurred in that fight, and you almost couldn't write it if you wanted to script it out any better. It was really an amazing display of that talent. I think you're exactly right. I say it on the show a lot as well, and you and I have talked about it at length too, about the idea of these guys who have like a few fights, or, you know, I've seen a handful of guys before the rules got serious who were like 2-7 or something like that, and then they go pro, and they're like 1-4. And some of these guys are actually pretty cocky despite all this. They're like, they're still badass. They still feel badass, which is interesting. But, you know, it's all good. MMA has an interesting for just about everybody. And there's something, one more thing I wanted to bring up. This is important, too, because there's been some heat on this kind of thing lately. And I want to talk to you because you and I actually have done it directly, and I know that sounds really intimate, but I'm going to go somewhere. I made a strong bet with someone maybe about a week ago, and they took it kind of personal. They said some things, I said some things, and they said, let's make a bet. I felt like their bet was weak. I rose the stakes to show, you know, I'm a hype dude, man, so I rose the stakes super high. Then they, you know, got offended but agreed. And I just wanted to say that, you know, hardcore betting and crazy stuff and people saying things and agreeing to things, these kind of things happen all the time. And you and I have a good example It's nothing that necessarily to be taken like the end of the universe. It's MMA, and people get like people get hyped, and people these things happen. It's a common occurrence, I guess, maybe. And you could enlighten us a little on these situations, maybe.
Me or Kobe?
You.
Hang on, man. Say that. You know what? I was zoning out. I thought you were talking to him. Say that again. Say condense that for me.
All right, I will condense it for you. There is a lot of betting, wagering things said in our MMA community. Sometimes they can be quite intense, and I was saying that it's such commonplace that people shouldn't take it so crazy personal. If someone says like, "Oh, well, here's I don't know $2,000 to prove what you're saying," or "I'll bet my job that you won't do this," or "my beard," or if that happens in a conversation, you probably have already walked partway there on your own. And shouldn't be too upset when these happen, because it's not super rare, I guess. That's what I was getting at.
No, it's not rare at all. This is a very emotional sport to start with, and then the people that get involved, the fans are diehard. You know, show me another sport where you have a Chris Scoggins type of support with the people that he brings and that sets, you know, the House of Blues on fire and the screaming. There's a lot of emotion in this sport. So no, you know, I think that's somewhat expected.
Yeah, you know, I saw one the other day, and just recently, as a matter of fact, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was basically saying, in short, I'll sum it up a little bit, and you may remember, he was kind of basically saying, because I'm male, and I'm 6'1", and I weigh 220 pounds, and I've watched some fights and been to some, that I could come down there and beat up your flyweights and Sarah McMahon. I think there may have been a wager of a couple $1,000 suggested.
You're talking about that guy the other night on Facebook?
Yeah, this is just one of many examples. But, yeah, this was the most recent one that I actually saw, and I was bringing this one up as an example of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, you know what, man? That I don't know what that guy's problem was. His name was Justin White, and if he walked in my house right now, I'd punch him right square in his mouth. It's a macho thing, and it's you know, there again, there's emotion that went from like he's friends with Jeremy Joels, who Danny Guthrow said something, and so now it's this. It's also the prominence of social media, and everybody can hear basically almost what you're thinking these days. But yeah, man. But the thing is, you know, I sent the guy the address, and I was like, "Come on down." And I did that because I knew he would never come.
Exactly.
He would. Those guys are never ever going to show up. But again, it's machoism. It's the sport in general. It's going to draw your alpha male guys, and he may really think he's going to come beat up Danny. But then some money was thrown at him, and I think he was trolling us, to be honest, looking back on it. I think it was an epic troll job.
we got a troll job for free, and you know, sometimes you got to pay for that, especially in Cleveland. It's good stuff. We should be more appreciative.
I mean, you know, but I tell you what I didn't appreciate is a person on there that was allowing his buddy to throw. Because see, I'll go ahead and tell you right now, Jeremy Joels comes to our gym sometimes. We let him train with us. We don't charge him. And me, Trent, Danny, you know, Jimmy, and so his friend gets on there and wants to threaten all of us, and nothing was ever said like, "Hey, bro, stop." So that bothered me a little bit.
I actually kind of felt when I was reading it that there was a real lack of like, "Yo, maybe you should not," or anything like that of nature. It was actually like, because I also know Jeremy, and I was kind of weirded out. I'll be honest, man. Like, I like Jeremy, but sometimes he'll say something maybe like, "I could totally beat," you know, I don't know. I can't think of it off the top of my head. I can beat some good top 10 ranked UFC fighter, no problem.
Right.
Maybe on a UFC
night. That's
what
started all this.
And, you know.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Oh, okay. So in this guy, I didn't remember the beginning, but this has happened before, you know. So you're like, I could beat Carlos Condit. And you're like, "Nah, dude, come on, let's be realistic." I was like, "Well, we'd like to watch you fight. You know, you can be exciting, but you're like 2-8 or whatever. There's a huge difference." Huge. Like, to say that is this. And then it goes from there to something crazy that I thought, I mean, if just my honest opinion on that one in particular, I thought it was getting kind of sexist in the assumptions that some people were making that, oh, well, you know, because I'm this tall and I weigh this much, then I can beat up someone, you know, who either weighs less or it has, you know, is a female. That got a little weird.
Did he threaten Sarah on there? I blocked him. I didn't see probably the last quarter of all that. Did he threaten Sarah?
There was a part where he said that he could come and defeat Sarah McMahon, and then there was a part where it kind of got like, I'll beat Anthony Canzano and Sarah McMahon. And his reason, to what I gathered, and I replied to it a little bit, you know me, I can't help it sometimes, but he basically was kind of saying like, yeah, you know, y'all don't know, but I'm 6'2", I'm 220 with some skill, so, you know, therefore I would win because, you know, what I was perceiving was saying, because I'm a dude and I'm this size and that matters.
Let me tell you something. I am 6'3", 225 pounds. I train Sarah McMahon, and I'm pretty sure she could beat my ass, okay? So let's don't get it twisted that just because I'm tall and weigh a lot that I'm going to beat anybody up. I mean, I can handle my own, but if I grapple Jimmy Fowler, who weighs 115 pounds, he's going to choke me out in the first minute every single time. And I know how to fight. I know how to fight good.
No question.
But no, yeah, I didn't see all that stuff, man. Well, the only thing that was accomplished was that he closed doors for Jeremy Joels that otherwise would have never been closed because I always liked him, and I still like him. I'm just not going to train him anymore.
Yeah, understandable, man. I really think the theme of the show as we close down here has been the almost the cerebral aspect of MMA, man, because there's like so much going on beyond the actual fight night. You know, it's kind of like that saying when maybe there's a call that people don't like or certain fighters getting booed, and you have to be like, guys, you know, this person trained for 2 months for tonight. You know, don't be mad at this dude. Like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of energy in the air. And the best thing about it is that I've never been to an event where everyone walks away, and no matter what happens, it's all good. And we get together for these family get-togethers again and stuff. And I think a lot of people do have a grasp on that is a piece, man. Or at least I hope. And if they don't, they can continue to tune into this show and get educated.
They'll get schooled.
Straight schooled. Listen, Blake, man, I always enjoy spending time with you. Usually we do it in 2-3 hour segments over some amazing fights, but I always love when we get to sit down for 30-minute hour talks. It's going to keep on going. You guys out there can expect that new prom picture this July.
Yes.
It's gonna
we'll,
be
yes.
The one yet.
We'll do that outside the Memminger.
I realized that everyone, you know, Jeanette pointed this out to me the other day. She was like, you know, you guys perpetually are slowly getting in better shape as I look down the history of your extremely sensual photos. You got, I was happy about that. You know, apparently, you know, we're getting healthy. So, you know, we're looking good, Blake. Good time.
Hey,
I don't know about you,
but I'm leaning out a little bit, okay? I climbed a mountain. Did you know that I climbed a mountain in Colorado last month?
I did, man. I know. You are... I was surprised that you hadn't already.
Well, you know, that, me too. But it's just because there's not one around here. I would have done it this morning. But I went up there and I climbed a 14,000-foot mountain, and I realized I'm not in shape. I'm hurting. I'm really hurting. And so, you know, I've been sparring a little bit more. I hit pads the other night. I ran some stadiums. Paul T came to my gym two nights ago, sparred a few rounds with him, beat him up pretty good. But, hey, I'm heading towards 215, and, you know, muscle stealing sex appeal. That's the way I'm going for.
Absolutely, 100%. Blake, as always, man, we appreciate your time very much and also your opinions out here in the Southeast. I know this will be far from the last time we get together, so on behalf of myself, man, thank you again for coming on the show, and we will talk to you right around the corner, my brother.
Boys, y'all be good. Cubby, later. See you.
Peace. All right, everybody, War of the Words, Relentless Radio number 110. You heard it here, Blake Greasy. If you don't know it, check it out. Get yourself updated. If you've been around him, get yourself medically tested as well. This is War of the Words. Check us out on Facebook. Type it in. You'll know when you receive your enlightenment. On behalf of Sore Summer Fight Store, Tires for Hire, and all our friends out there in the Southeast, and hell, even our enemies, be good, We'll see you on episode 111.